Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
All right. Every Wednesday at this time, as his schedule will allow, we always talk to Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim. Your honor, it is an honor to have you here this morning. How are you?
No, it's my honor to be with you and to have your listeners and have an opportunity to talk to him. So thank you so much.
All right. So glad you are here. We don't have much time, so let's get right to it. You presented a senior tax relief plan to the council. Tell us the need that Bridgeport seniors are currently facing.
Well, here's what it is. Fixed incomes. Individuals, especially seniors on fixed incomes, need some relief. We're trying to do everything we can. We cut the mill rate a little bit this year. We've held the line on taxes. First year in, we had to deal with the state-imposed reval and a budget deficit left by us. But this is an administration. Our finance director, our city council, as mayor, have tried to just make sure that we can do everything we can. So this is a program that allows us to provide tax relief up to $1,200, actually, depending on your income brackets, $900 for some, $400 for others. If your income's under, I think the maximum is $58,000. So I asked the council to consider this. I'm asking the council to pass it. I'm asking residents to be aware of it. We'll notify them individually as it goes forward. And then to look forward, a little bit of tax relief as we move forward, understanding property taxes are too darn high, not just in our city, but in cities and towns across Connecticut.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
I want to do everything I can as mayor to fight for taxpayers. That's one of my top priorities, along with public safety and some of the challenges we have with funding education and youth programs.
Yeah, Mayor, you bring up a very good point, only because I know I lived in Bridgeport for a good amount of time with my husband when we first moved back, and that was one of the first things we noticed was property taxes are just very hard to, you know, to make even a dual income happen. So I can imagine the challenge that seniors are going. So kudos to that. Well, we know last night you guys had three successful events, really, in the city, and one of those was the National Night Out. First of all, for anyone who doesn't know too much about it, what is that initiative? Because that's going on all across the country, correct?
Across the country, National Night Out, and I'm proud of Bridgeport. I'm proud of the community and our uniform officers, our state troopers, fire departments, first responders, and a lot of nonprofits working together to build a better relationship. It's what it's about. And I saw that come out. We put pictures up of just people just enjoying themselves, playing basketball, soccer, eating ice cream, just talking, dancing, and breaking down what are these perceived barriers. And so Bridgeport, I think, can be a national example. Judging on what I saw last night, I thought there were a lot of hugs, so to speak, literally, but people just coming together. And so it sent a positive message out that we can push back on this if there's a perceived or real division at times. There's shortcomings, certainly, on challenges that law enforcement has with reaching out to the community. I want to build on that. And I saw it come together last night, so I want to give kudos, or whatever the right words are, to our community, to our departments, law enforcement, state troopers, nonprofits, everybody that participated. The only flaw I think that I saw was that we need to do it more often. This shouldn't be once a year.
We're speaking with Mayor Joe Ganim, Bridgeport Mayor, of course, and we speak to him once a week, and it's an honor to have him here. Mayor, earlier this week, you spoke up about a Bridgeport officer accused of sex assault. I got to tell you, everything that I read, all of your quotes, I totally agree with you. Mayor, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. I don't know if you want me to respond, I'm ready to respond whenever. Yeah, I mean, this was a... look, I was fed up as a person reading this and as mayor, and pushed constantly and will continue, not to override a due process, but to just make it happen deliberately. And if the end result is what the facts seem to bear out, and again, I won't prejudge, and it's not my job, and I don't have a role or authority under any ordinance or charter or laws, that the officer be terminated. And that's the end of the story. Domestic violence won't be tolerated. It's unbecoming. Coming, the term probably not strong enough of a Bridgeport officer or anyone, and past actions and now present charges seem to bear out that we need to move this department, and they are, to resolve this quickly and bring a just conclusion. I think I know what that's going to be, and I believe if the facts bear it out, it'll be termination. That's what I was stating.
So, Mayor Ganim, I think what Tony was saying before is basically, I think what you're doing is great to kind of model that going forward, because you're right. I mean, the fact is if these accusations are true, and looking at the track record of this officer, whether anybody's to do this, it kind of presents this challenge where how can the public trust someone if this is what you're doing in your personal life, or this is what you've been accused of doing? And, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you're sending a strong message, not just to this person, but going forward to the entire department.
And let me expand. Absolutely, especially in the areas of domestic violence and in this instance, where you have repeated history and pending charges, they need to be resolved quickly. I think, again, I can't predetermine it. I can make statements. I have no role in the discipline. But I think it's very clear, and it's been indicated to me, if these are proven true, and the hearing moves quickly as it was supposed to, then this officer will be terminated. And I think that's a message, again, not to be the heavy hand here, but in the background, as mayor, I think I have an obligation to be that and say that any acts by officers. Officers are held, as many of us, and none of us are perfect, so I don't expect perfection, but I do expect perfect efforts by officers, and I do expect supervisors to discipline, if it has to be harsh, to discipline harsh, to send a message out. If we're going to build on the credibility that we saw last night in National Night Out, with officers just displaying the best of Bridgeport's department, the best of some of our other uniform officers, and the best of the community come together, we need to make to recommit to every aspect of what we do. I'm seeing that from coming through, and I want to make sure it continues, and I want to be a part of that. Positive stuff.
Mayor Joe Ganim, well said this morning, my friend. Thank you so very, very much. We've run out of time. Hopefully we'll talk to you next week.
I hope so. Thank you so much. You guys are the best.
WICC 600's Tony and Melissa in the Morning present Community Inspiration. Ordinary people doing extraordinary things in our own backyard.
Jen Saunders started teaching at Tisdale School right here in Bridgeport when it first opened about 13 years ago, I believe. And this year, she's actually making kind of a career shift that she said is a little scary since she was a teacher for so long. She's been in the district for quite some time. She'll stay in the district, but she's now moving to the guidance department. But it's not going to stop her from giving back to her students on her own time and dime. Her continued work to support Bridgeport students made her this week's community inspiration.
A lot of the parents are working 2-3 jobs. They're not home to get the kids to the store. And oftentimes they don't have the funds. So pencils, paper, notebooks, folders, just your basics, crayons, colored pencils. And oftentimes the teachers are the ones going into their own pockets supplying the kids with those.
Do you have any examples of when you've had to either go into your own either bank account or you've had to do stuff outside of what your contract is, which is to just teach students?
Oh, absolutely. Every summer I would shop the sales, and I had my own little school store in my classroom so the kids could actually come in and get what they needed. I actually literally had a closet where they could go in and get whatever they needed that they weren't able to get over the summer.
That certainly is a sacrifice for you to have gone in and take your own money out to make sure kids felt prepared.
Absolutely. And it also helps, you know, with the daily flow of the classroom. When the kids have what they need, you know, your lesson goes a lot smoother. They can get access to the materials quickly. And, you know, your day can just go a lot quicker, as opposed to them not having something and then they can't perform a certain task. And, you know, it's just all around, it's easier for the student and the teacher.
You also went above and beyond during the summertime. What was it that you would put together for the kids over the summertime?
My colleague and I, Wendy Palmieri, we worked together for years, and we, you know, believe a lot in experiences and learning through experience. So we used to get a trip together to go to Nature's Classroom every year with the kids, which is like an outdoor learning experience science program. It's a 3-day trip. We stayed over 2 nights, 3 days. And so we would start raising money. We'd start thinking about it in the summer and start raising money at the very beginning of the year. The kids would write letters to local community members, businesses, and we would raise money to fund this trip that we would go to in May. And we would always get it fully funded because we had local donors that just love to give and give back to the schools and the kids.
I think it's incredible because when people go to work most times, they're going to do what their bosses ask them to do. But a lot of times, I have to be honest, Jen, people aren't going to go above and beyond. So why do you do it?
You know, you have to experience it with the kids. The look on their faces when they're hiking through the woods, and most of these kids have never really even been out of the city. And they get back to being their age and a kid again, and they're just having so much fun to experience that. It just makes you want to do it again and again every year. It's the feeling you get and the experience you can give to these kids, and it's just a beautiful thing.
And you had mentioned to me that you also have put together some kind of it's with your theater program or something. What's going on with the theater program that you have a hand in?
How that works is several years ago, we became a turnaround arts school, and I kind of volunteered or stepped up help out with the theater program, and I have no experience with theater. So I kind of got on the email and phone and contacted local theaters and school systems, and I ended up hooking up with a school in Westport, a middle school in Westport, and we forged this awesome relationship where we kind of piggyback off whatever play they do, and we get to kind of borrow their sets and props and costumes. And now it's kind of evolved into we go and they bring our kids up and we see their play, and then you know, I end up renting a U-Haul, and I drive the U-Haul up, and I get their set, and I bring it back to our school, and it's just awesome. And then whatever set we use, I give to another school in Bridgeport, so it's almost like funneling it through, the other schools in Bridgeport. So it's really great. It's a great relationship. And then Westport comes, and they see our play. Yeah, it's awesome.
I have to be honest, Jen, this is all on your time. This is all without being compensated, really. I think this makes you stand out as a teacher, but do you consider that? Do you think of yourself as like a local hero to these kids?
I don't think I stand out. I think all Bridgeport teachers stand out, because if you were to walk in probably any school or any classroom, you'll see a teacher in Bridgeport doing something remarkable or something they don't have to be doing, but they do it because it's for the kids. It's the kids. You know, I couldn't imagine teaching anywhere else.
She sounds like a remarkable lady. She's doing some really, really good work. I was very, very unhappy to hear about Daring Ann Donut closing its doors after 30 years of being in business. Now, I ate many a donut over there at the Daring Ann Donut.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, the original owners, Johnny Delmonico and his wife, Lucille, they started the whole thing right from scratch. Johnny is a very talented guy. Johnny is a barber. Johnny is a accomplished musician. And he had a barber shop, which was right next door to where Daring Ann Donut is. And it was Johnny and his wife that said, hey, you know something? Coffee and donuts would really work beautifully over here on this corner, because right across the street you had the train station.
Right. Oh, it's perfect.
It's perfect. Mm-hmm. So, you know, men and women who are going to catch the train, they go in there, they get a donut or an egg and cheese sandwich, they get their coffee, and they're on the run. Well, when it opened in 1989, I had known Johnny for many years. He was a good friend of my father's. And we used to hang out there all the time.
Oh, I didn't know that.
All the time. And they had the best donuts. They opened like at 6 o'clock in the morning. And by 6 o'clock, there was already a long line outside on the street waiting for them to open up for coffee and donuts. And I guess it just got to be too much for Johnny and his wife, because he was still running the barber shop.
Yeah, I think they own now Johnny's and Company, I guess, it's a business on the Post Road.
Yes, another hairstylist place.
Gotcha.
Right there on the Post Road, which that's where I go to get my hair cut. And like I said, it just got to be too much. And they packed it in. They sold it to this new owner. But Johnny always said, worst mistake he ever made was selling the original Donut Inn.
Really?
Yeah. He said that that place was a gold mine. Because, hey, let's face it, times change. You know, we all go through changes, but one thing will never
breakfast
go out of style.
Will never change.
Yeah, we all want coffee and donuts and hard rolls and all of that. And for the rest of eternity. We're going to be eating those things and catching a train to get to work.
Yeah.
So that's the way that went. But I'm just surprised that nobody is buying it to keep it going.
I know. I was trying to find some research on it, Tony, because you and I were talking about this in one of the commercial breaks. And it looks like, if I'm reading this correctly, and I could be completely wrong, but according to the Darien Times, the Noroten Heights Shopping Center is being torn down and renovated into restaurants, retail stores, and residential units. So basically the current owner is retiring, and it looks like that location is getting completely torn down. But still, I'm wondering if there would be just another property or somewhere else that they could open it, just because it sounds like, I mean, I've never been there, but when I was reading about it earlier this morning, I thought, oh my gosh, this sounds amazing. These are like 35 different homemade donuts. I mean, this sounds like as local gets. And when I was reading it, I'm surprised that, like you said, somebody wouldn't reopen it, because it seems like it's mostly regulars that go in there. It's mostly people who are there every day. They're known by name, and it just seems like it's a very sad landmark kind of going away.
It gave me a feeling of Mayberry, like the Andy Griffith show.
Yes.
You know, people would go in there every day, the same people, get their coffee, their donuts, sit at a table, argue politics, sports, religion, whatever they were talking about, and you knew everybody. I know when I walked
thought
in
cheers.
There. Yeah, exactly. And when I walked in there, I knew everybody. You knew everybody.
That's
I saw
so
people
cool.
that I went to high school with. I saw new friends, old friends. It's sad that it's going down. But things change, and you're absolutely right. That whole corner is probably going to be destroyed for different businesses, restaurants, condominiums, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
So there you go. Leave it to a child. Leave it to a child. There's an 11-year-old kid by the name of Ruben Martinez in El Paso, Texas. And we all know what happened in El Paso, a domestic terrorist attack at that Walmart there on Saturday. He was trying to figure out a way to help heal the community. This kid took this act of terrorism very personally. So he has started a thing called the El Paso Challenge, where he's challenging everyone in El Paso to do 22 good deeds for each other. The number 22 is in honor of the 22 victims who were murdered. Now, Ruben is suggesting things like mowing someone's lawn, visiting a nursing home, pay for someone's lunch or dinner, donate to families in need, write something on a letter and tell them how great they are. Hold the door for everyone, he says. His mother says he came up with the idea after, quote, he was having some trouble dealing with what happened. I explained to him, she said, that we could not live in fear, and people in our community are caring and loving people. But I give this kid a lot of credit, because, you know, at 11 years old, I know when I was 11 years old, I guess when something like this happened, you were aware of it, but you kind of went along with your business, and that was the end of it. You know, you did what 11-year-olds do. This kid, he's special. It's a little bit different here with this kid. He took it personal, and he wants to do something about it. So
I think it's an amazing challenge. I hope it's not something just in El Paso. I hope everybody does it across the nation. In fact, Tony, I think you and I should pledge on the air that we'll do it. We could do 22. We could split it. I'll do 11. You do 11. And we should let everyone know what we did, and then maybe more people will do this challenge. I think it's an amazing challenge. We should put it on Facebook. We should let everyone know. And should we give ourselves like a timeline? How much time should we do this? Should we do this in a week or so? What do you think?
I would say a week or two. Yeah, okay.
Give ourselves like a good week to do those 22 things. I think if we could get more people to do good deeds, like you said, it's easy to dwell on, you know, the murder charges or what's going to happen to the alleged shooter, and, you know, and focusing on the bad. But what I love also, not only is he being proactive, but he's also focusing on the good. Where do we go from here? How do we go up? It reminds me of 9/11. It was something that at 9/11, when everybody came together and they sang publicly and they were just in unity across the nation, even if you weren't in New York, it was something that I believe at the time President Bush said, you know, we need to take this tragedy, and how do we move forward? How do we do good out of such horrible circumstances? And that's what this kid's doing. So we should do it. We should do this. I think it's a cool challenge.
Here's the problem. You know, when something like this happens, everybody does come together for a little while. The operative phrase there is for a little while. And then people like kind of forget. And
they drop off, yeah.
They go back to their lives, and it kind of drops off, like you said. And that's kind of the problem. I mean, if we kind of kept this in the front of our minds all of the time, you know, the world would be a little bit better, I think, anyway. So.
No, you're absolutely right. I wish it was. We talk about that at Christmas time. Everybody does good deeds around Christmas time. I'll hold the door open for you. I'll donate to this charity. I'll give my time to a soup kitchen. But then as soon as January rolls around, all of a sudden, a lot of those people turn right back into Mr. Scrooge. And you think of, you know, why is it like that? Why do we only get excited when gifts are being handed out or it's the 'tis the season attitude? And you're right, Tony. We should be this way all of the time. But I think to capitalize on this 11-year-old and the effort he's making, I think we should have it go across the nation. It shouldn't just be in El Paso. I think we should do it. I'm game to do it. I think if we give ourselves a good week, we should check back in next week and see how we do. Let's see what we could do for the community.
A lot of fathers like to share their love of sports with their children, even though many of us are old and out of shape, of course. I mean, I can't even throw a ball to my kids without my arm killing me. So just imagine what it's like for Tom Brady, who's one of the most successful athletes of all time. But as always, parenting isn't easy. In an interview with Men's Health, he said that his older son, Jack, who is 11, is just like him. But he says his younger son, 9-year-old Benny, hates sports. Now, that must be very, very difficult for Brady to swallow. Brady said, quote, I thought he'd be like Jack. So I was like, come on, man, let's do this. And he was like, no. And he said it was, Brady said it was hard for me. I was thinking, what do you mean? He's a boy. He should do all the things that I do. Because everything is about Brady, about Tom Brady.
I was waiting for the Tony.
Never mind what's good for the son or the children.
Right.
Never mind
it's
what
Tom
makes,
Brady's world. It's how do we fit into it.
How do we make the children happy is not really important. Benny just likes different things, he says, and it's great now. He's starting to accept it. He says, I just have to do what he wants to do. And when we do it, we have a great time. He's like, oh my God, Dad, you're so funny. He loves joking, and I joke back. But for him not to like sports, for him not to participate in sports, got to be very, very hard for a guy like Tom Brady.
Yeah, I would think that. I think just for any guy, I think they naturally, a lot of times, most men kind of think, I just think about my brother in this situation. He's expecting his first son in October. And all, you know, the other day I walked in on a conversation he was having with Derek and he said, okay, so when do you start to figure out if we could be the coaches for a little league team in the town? When do we start to figure that out? You know, when do we start to do that? And Derek's like, I don't know. And he said, well, you know, both our boys are going to play baseball. I mean, I think it's just kind of a natural thing for men to kind of bond over. And I think they assume, you know, the son is going to follow suit and be exactly like the dad. But this is why I argue all the time. People say, you know, oh, don't expect Chase to be a Yankee fan. He's going to follow his father. Not necessarily. Look at Tom Brady's son. He doesn't like sports and his dad does.
Well,
maybe Chase won't be a Red Sox fan and he'll follow his mother.
I don't believe that we should force the children to do anything that they don't want to. If they naturally want to play sports, encourage it. But the way that I look at it, my sons, I thank God every day, they never showed any interest in anything except for schoolwork. That's what they were into. You know, they wanted to make sure they had A's and B's. But I always said, you know, whatever they want, if they want to be a ballet dancer, that's great. If they want to be a painter, that's great. If you know, it's
whatever
not,
their passions are,
exactly.
You're going to go off of that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That gets lost in translation a lot, though, Tony, because especially I've seen parents who, if they have their own nostalgia, I mean, Tom Brady is obviously a very highly ranked athlete. But when you talk about parents who, let's just say, were the captains of their high school football team or were the captains of their track team or they competed in college, whatever the case may be, they naturally are, I see it even in my husband. I have to be honest. He and I butt heads all the time over this because he says, I really hope Chase gets into rugby. And I tell him, why? I took you to the hospital so many times in college for rugby. Why would I want my son getting concussions? Like, if he wants to do it and he says, hey,
you know what, Dad, I'd love to learn about this. That's one thing. But if my husband's going to start pushing rugby onto Chase, we're going to have some problems. So I know that there's, but I know that a lot of that is the pride. They loved it so much. So how can my kids not love it? They're a reflection of me. They're a part of me. So if I love it so much, they must love it. But that's just not the case. In a lot of those instances, the kids don't love what the parents love. That's just the way it is.
Well, what do you think? Is this the question of the day?
I think it's worth talking about, don't you?
I think it is.
I think it's a good idea. So I posted to Facebook, and if you go to WICC 600, check it out there. You'll see there's a post up there, and it says, you know, as a parent, do you encourage, you know, do you push your kids into sports, or do you just let them make that decision on their own? Is that something that you sort of get hands off? And if they come to you and say, hey, you know what, I want to be a soccer player. Great, let's start going and kicking the ball around. Or is it something where as soon as you have a kid, you think, all right, let's start with getting him the jerseys. Let's start with getting the soccer balls. Let's make this known before they can even walk. I mean, are you that kind of a parent? There's certainly no right or wrong parenting. There is no guidebook, of course, but we'd love to hear what you have to say about it. Like I said, my husband and I are pretty different on that topic. And again, there's really no right or wrong answer, but we'd love to share your answers here on the air at 8:30, as we do every day for our question of the day on Facebook.
Both of us noticed an article this morning on Tom Brady, how Tom Brady is very, very upset that one of his sons hates sports. And it was very difficult for Tom Brady to accept that, but he ended up accepting it, and now he says he has a great time participating with his younger son in his interests. And but he said at first it took a lot for him to grab a hold of this and say, oh my God, I have a son that doesn't like sports.
Yeah, I think for any guy out there, whether you are a Tom Brady fan or not, I think it's weird at first. I was saying my older brother, who's expecting his first son in October, he's already talking about becoming the Little League coach in the town that we live in with my husband. He's talking about, well, we've got to get the boys into baseball. And it's like, oh, okay, Nicholas, like, pump the brakes a little bit. But I think that's natural. Most guys want to get their guys into sports.
Well, I've got news for you. You know, it's like my two sons. My two sons are sports fanatics, but they never played.
Mm-hmm.
My older son, Sam, he wanted to play sports. He's a big kid. He really is. He's like 6 foot tall, and he's big. He's strong. And he wanted to play football. And he tried out for the team, and he made it at Stanford High. He made it. And he was only on the team for about 3 days.
Yeah.
And he came home, and he was like, I can't do it. And I says, all right, you don't have to do it if you don't want to do it. And he says, it's not that I don't want to do it. He says, there's just not enough time in the day. He says, these practices every day, he says, it's cutting into my schoolwork.
Yeah.
I've got to come home and I've got to do my homework the right way. I've got to do it that was his attitude.
Right.
He says, I've got to do it the right way. My kid, if he doesn't get an A+, that's it. He has a nervous breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his problem. He had a real problem with that. So he quit. And I know that the coach, I don't want to say the coach hounded him, but the coach was like, hey, come on, you could do this. This is good for your morale,
extra,
and this
yeah,
and that. It's good for this. It's,
you know,
I respect him for that. The schoolwork was important, and he said if I have to give something up, it's going to be the football if something's going to suffer.
Yeah,
but we never forced them to do anything that they didn't want to do.
Ironically enough, the same brother who's excited to be a Little League coach at some point for his unborn son. He was a walk-on for Division I college baseball, and we found out at Parents Weekend that he declined the offer. And, you know, immediately, you know, just because we had been traveling with him for years since he was, gosh, 6, 7 years old. He's been playing since T-ball when he was 3. And we just couldn't, you know, why, Nicholas? And he said exactly the same thing. It cuts into my life.
Mm-hmm.
It cuts into my friends. It
mm-hmm.
cuts into my schoolwork. And, you know, I don't want to continue. I want to leave baseball as something that I loved and a great pastime, but I don't want to be burned out from it. And we all just, we washed our hands of it. Okay, you know, we're on board with you. We love you, and it's fine. But sometimes there are parents who wouldn't be okay with that, and they would get very upset about it.
And make no mistake about it, if you push your kid and they don't want to do it, they're going to hate it. They're going to hate, whether it's baseball or the violin or whatever, they're going to hate it.
They're going to hate it, and they're going to resent
hate you.
Yeah, they are. They're going to resent you.
All right.
Seems like that's what a lot of people are saying, Tony.
All right, let's read some of these responses. I'll go first?
Yeah, of course.
All right, Carol says, I encouraged activity, but I did not push. My older daughter chose sports on her own. Well, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Exactly. Let them drive the ship for that one. Irene says, my daughter chose swimming on her own. I believe in letting kids decide what they want to do in life. There
you
go.
All right, sounds good. Ida says, if you push, they don't enjoy. Why do that? I explored and found something my son wanted and went with whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think Ida continued to say that he ended up getting more into crafts and things. She said she was at the crafts table all the time, so kudos to you, Ida.
There you go.
Michelle says, encourage activities, but don't push. Kids will eventually find something they like, hopefully not playing video games.
Yeah, there you go. I think encouraging, this is from Lauren, by the way. I think encouraging children to try new things is okay. Some kids are cautious and won't try different things or activities on their own. But once they're given the sport a good effort, if they finished out the season and it's not quite for them, it's okay for them to move on and try something new.
I think that's fair. The only thing I can think of, Lauren, is when I was in soccer, I had signed up to do travel soccer. And I remember I had broken my toe because soccer was my love. And I just couldn't get back into it after that. And we'd already signed up for a season. And I can remember going home. I asked my dad, can I please quit? I don't want to continue. And they'd already paid for it. I said, I don't want to keep going. I don't want to keep going. And my dad, of course, it's fine. It's fine. My mom was livid. We already paid for this. You got to finish the season. And then you don't have to look at soccer ever again. So I agree, Lauren. You give it a good shot, and then once they get through it, you know you move on to something else. But once you commit, you commit. Lucille says, never push, only if they want to.
All right. Eight, getting closer and closer to the greatest bluefish tournament on Earth. Now, if you'd like to register, go online to bluefishtournament.com. Call 203-366-BLUE, or just go to a bait and tackle shop. You can register that way. It's happening the weekend of August 24th and 25th. $25,000 for the heaviest bluefish, but there are other prizes as well, equaling $40,000 in cash prizes. Now, this morning, we're going to speak to Jason. Jason is over at Bobby J's Tackle Shop in Milford. And Jason, welcome to the show. So glad to have you here today.
How you doing?
All right, we're doing okay. We're very excited about the Bluefish Tournament. Thank you once again for participating. What kind of advice can you give a fisherman to catch the bluefish? For example, does the weather figure in? Are there more fish out there when it's sunny? Is it better if it's raining, if it's cloudy? What would you say?
I think more timing matters most. You know, early morning, you definitely have a better bite. Same thing goes for, like, you know, close to sundown. You know, it's important to get out there early and get a lot of chum in the water. You know, definitely try to bring the fish to you, especially when you're looking for, like, a tournament-winning fish.
So, Jason, is it fair to say that maybe you should take a nap during the day and start your fishing excursion at, like, 5 at night, pull an all-nighter like we did in college to get those tests done? Is that what you're saying, pull an all-nighter maybe?
That has worked good for some people in the past. You know, everybody has, like, their favorite tide to fish their favorite spot. So whether that tide falls in the middle of the day or if it falls in the middle of the night, you know, if that tide produces for them, they should be there at that time.
All right, what about equipment? How important is the fishing rod? I mean, does that matter either way?
Well, yeah, you're out there trying to win a fish that's worth $25,000. You know, you want to make sure your tackle's up to par, you know, make sure your line's fresh, make sure you don't have any damaged equipment, make sure your drag's working properly. You know, you really want to make sure if you latch into that fish that you're going to be able to land it, not just, you know, wish you landed it.
All right, Jason is here from Bobby J's in Milford, all part of the greatest bluefish tournament on Earth. He's with Bobby J's Tackle Shop.
Yeah, and I know, Jason, I love hearing, just because I know for myself, I only have a handful of times that I've gone fishing, and really, I have to be honest, other than it was great times with family and I can remember going, I don't have any crazy stories to share, but I love hearing from you guys and some of the fish tales is what I keep calling them. Anything that stands out to you, maybe a moment even on Long Island Sound or just in your whole lifetime of fishing that stands out to you, maybe a moment that you'd want to share?
Not really. Like, every day is, like, you know, like, awesome being on the water. It's like a mini vacation without being on vacation. So just the more times you get out there and enjoy the great resources that we have. You know, you just get out there and do it.
How often do you get out there on the sound?
About 5-6 times a week.
Oh, you do?
So, Tony, yeah. That's what you should do next time you do a staycation. You should go fishing. It's like a vacation without going anywhere.
Yeah, that sounds good. You have your own boat and everything, Jace?
Yes.
Really?
So Tony's going to start living on your boat. That just happened right here on the air. I'm really sorry, Jason. any advice to, I know a lot of times people may be intimidated to sign up for the tournament if they're not avid fishermen or people that go out every, you know, few days like you do. Any encouragement to the people who maybe just enjoy fishing and go a few times in the summertime, why they should register for the tournament and give it a shot?
It's literally luck of the draw. You know, getting the most amount of fish might be skill, but getting that one big fish definitely doesn't come down to skill a lot of times. You know, it's just having your line in the right place at the right time. You know, I have personal friends that have won the top two spots in the past, like, you know, 10 years. You know, so it's like anybody can really do it as long as you put some time in and try.
All right. Jason from Bobby J's Tackle Shop in Milford, we thank you so much for taking a few moments. Where are you guys located in Milford?
354 New Haven Ave.
Okay, sounds good. Jason, thank you so much for taking the time, and thank you for being part of the tournament all these years. Thank you.
No problem.
All right, you got it.